Octavia Butler's Kindred stands as a haunting masterpiece that defies easy categorization. Since its publication in 1979, this genre-bending novel has captivated readers with its unflinching examination of slavery through the eyes of a modern Black woman. Butler's work has influenced countless writers and earned her the prestigious MacArthur Genius Fellowship, cementing her legacy as the first science fiction writer to receive this honor. Beyond literary circles, Kindred has become required reading in universities across America, praised for its ability to make the horrors of slavery viscerally real to contemporary audiences. Celebrities like Viola Davis and Octavia Spencer have cited the book as transformative in their understanding of American history. What makes this novel so powerful is not just its premise, but its execution. Butler doesn't merely tell us about slavery, she forces us to experience it alongside her protagonist, challenging us to confront uncomfortable questions about how we ourselves might have survived such brutal circumstances. On June 9, 1976, Dana Franklin's 26th birthday, reality fractures in ways she could never have imagined. While unpacking books in her new California home with her husband, Kevin, Dana experiences a sudden wave of dizziness that transports her across time and space to antebellum Maryland. There, she finds herself saving a drowning red-haired boy named Rufus Whalen from certain death, only to be threatened at gunpoint by the boy's father before being yanked back to her own time. The entire episode lasts mere seconds in 1976, but minutes in the past. This first disorienting trip marks the beginning of Dana's involuntary time travel. Each journey follows a pattern. Whenever Rufus's life is in danger, Dana is pulled across time to save him. The reason gradually becomes clear. Rufus is her ancestor, destined to father a child with a free Black woman named Alice Greenwood. That child, Hagar, will continue Dana's family line. If Rufus dies before this happens, Dana herself might never exist. The mechanism of time travel in Kindred isn't explained through science or magic. It simply happens, much like the inexplicable horror of slavery itself. What makes Dana's situation particularly terrifying is the lack of control. She can't predict when she'll be summoned back in time, nor how long she'll stay. Only mortal danger to herself seems capable of returning her to 1976. This uncertainty creates a constant state of anxiety, as Dana must remain perpetually prepared for sudden displacement into a world where her very existence as a Black woman makes her vulnerable to enslavement, violence, and rape. When Dana's white husband Kevin accidentally accompanies her on one trip, their relationship faces unprecedented strain. Though they return together, their experiences of antebellum Maryland differ dramatically. For Dana, every moment is fraught with danger. For Kevin, it's uncomfortable but navigable. This stark contrast illuminates the racial dynamics that persist even in their modern marriage, forcing both characters to confront uncomfortable truths about privilege, power, and perspective that continue to shape American society today. Dana's immersion in plantation life strips away any romanticized notions of the antebellum South. The Whalen Plantation isn't the columned mansion of Gone with the Wind, but a functional Georgian colonial farmhouse surrounded by fields worked by enslaved people. Here, Dana confronts the day-to-day brutality of slavery, not just the dramatic whippings that leave her scarred, both physically and emotionally, but the mundane cruelties that grind people down over time. In the cookhouse, Dana meets Sarah, whose three children were sold away from her, leaving only her mute daughter, Carrie. "He sold all but Carrie," Sarah tells Dana, her voice flat with old pain. "She wasn't worth much to him. He'd have sold her too if she'd been able to talk." The casual cruelty of this economic calculation, that a child's disability makes her less valuable as property, reveals how thoroughly slavery commodified human beings. The plantation operates on a complex social hierarchy. Tom Whalen, the master, rules through calculated violence rather than impulsive cruelty. His son Rufus grows from a relatively innocent child into a man corrupted by the power slavery gives him over others. Margaret Whalen, Tom's wife, takes out her frustrations on the enslaved people around her, particularly those who threaten her sense of control. Even among the enslaved community, there are divisions: house slaves versus field hands, those born on the plantation versus those newly purchased. Dana quickly learns that survival requires a careful performance of submission. After witnessing Whalen whip a man for answering back, she adopts what plantation driver Luke calls the secret to survival. You gotta say yes to the white folks and smile. This outward compliance masks inner resistance, a psychological splitting that takes a tremendous toll. Dana struggles to maintain her sense of self while performing the role required of her, constantly aware that a single misstep could result in devastating punishment. Perhaps most disturbing is how quickly Dana begins to adapt. After just weeks on the plantation, she finds herself becoming accustomed to things that initially horrified her. "I was getting used to being watched," she reflects, "getting used to acting the way they expected me to act." This normalization process terrifies her, suggesting how easily human beings can adapt to inhumane conditions, a psychological defense mechanism that allows for survival but comes at the cost of one's full humanity. At the heart of Kindred lies a profound moral dilemma that defies easy resolution. Dana discovers that her ancestor Hagar will be born to Alice Greenwood, a free black woman, and Rufus Whalen, the white slaveholder's son. This creates an impossible situation. Dana must ensure this union happens to secure her own existence, yet the relationship between Alice and Rufus is fundamentally one of rape and coercion. As Dana watches young Rufus grow into a man who feels entitled to Alice's body, she faces a terrible choice. Should she help perpetuate a violent relationship to ensure her own birth, or should she intervene, potentially erasing herself from existence? When Rufus demands that Dana convince Alice to come to his bed willingly or watch her be beaten and taken by force, Dana becomes an unwilling accomplice in her ancestor's violation. "He wasn't a monster at all," Dana reflects about Rufus, "just an ordinary man who sometimes did the monstrous things his society said were legal and proper." This observation captures the insidious nature of systemic oppression, how ordinary people become capable of extraordinary cruelty when that cruelty is normalized by their culture. Rufus genuinely believes he loves Alice, yet his love is possessive and destructive, unable to recognize her humanity as equal to his own. Alice's response to her situation is equally complex. Initially defiant, she eventually submits to Rufus not out of acceptance, but strategic survival. "I'm going to him," she tells Dana. "He knew I would sooner or later, but he don't know I'm doing it now because I want to kill him." The relationship between Alice and Rufus becomes a microcosm of the larger power dynamics of slavery, a system that corrupts even the most intimate human connections. Dana's relationship with both Alice and Rufus grows increasingly complicated. Alice sometimes sees Dana as a friend and ally, sometimes as a betrayer who helps maintain her captivity. She cruelly calls Dana "white nigger" for her perceived complicity with Rufus. Meanwhile, Dana develops a conflicted attachment to Rufus himself, part maternal, part fraternal, wholly dysfunctional. She repeatedly saves his life while knowing he will grow to abuse his power. This emotional tangle illustrates how slavery poisoned human relationships at every level, creating impossible situations where clear moral action becomes nearly impossible to discern. Butler uses Dana's physical and psychological trauma to explore how history lives in our bodies and minds across generations. Dana's experiences in the past leave literal scars, most dramatically, the loss of her arm when she finally tears herself free from Rufus's dying grasp. This amputation symbolizes how no one could emerge whole from the experience of slavery, neither those who lived through it nor their descendants who carry its legacy. The physical wound becomes a permanent reminder, much like the psychological scars that persist in African American communities generations after emancipation. The novel suggests that understanding history requires more than intellectual knowledge. It demands embodied experience. Dana's college classmate, who inspired Butler's writing, knew Black history but didn't feel it in his gut. Through Dana's physical suffering, Butler forces readers to engage with slavery not as an abstract historical concept, but as lived reality. When Dana is whipped for teaching a slave to read, we feel each lash alongside her. When she's forced to work in the fields until she collapses, we experience her exhaustion. The viscimal descriptions of violence, the sting of the whip, the burning muscles, the dizzy spells from heat and exhaustion transform academic understanding into visceral knowledge. This embodied approach to history challenges the comfortable distance that often characterizes historical education. Dana initially believes her modern perspective gives her advantages over those born into slavery. She knows about the Underground Railroad, has read slave narratives, understands the system intellectually. Yet this knowledge proves insufficient when confronted with the daily reality of plantation life. After failing in her escape attempt, Dana wonders, what had I done wrong? Why couldn't I have managed to escape as so many had? Her modern confidence crumbles in the face of actual experience. The novel forces readers to confront how their own assumptions about historical resistance and survival might be oversimplified. The novel also explores how trauma shapes identity across generations. Dana's connection to her ancestors isn't just genetic, but experiential. By living through some of what they endured, she gains a deeper understanding of herself and her heritage. When Carrie silently defends Dana against accusations that she isn't truly Black because of her education, Nigel translates, "She means it doesn't come off, Dana, the Black. It doesn't come off." This moment affirms that Dana's identity is both innate and forged through shared historical experience. Through Dana's journey, Butler illustrates how historical trauma becomes embedded in cultural memory, passed down through stories, behaviors, and unconscious responses to danger. The physical toll of Dana's time travel serves as a metaphor for the ongoing impact of historical trauma. Each journey leaves her more battered, more aware of her vulnerability, and more deeply connected to the experiences of her ancestors. Her missing arm becomes not just a personal wound, but a symbol of collective memory, a physical manifestation of how the past reaches into the present, demanding acknowledgement and understanding. Butler suggests that true historical knowledge must be written on the body as well as the mind, challenging readers to move beyond intellectual understanding to emotional and physical empathy. Dana and Kevin's interracial marriage serves as both counterpoint and parallel to the relationship between Rufus and Alice. In 1976, their union faces disapproval but is legally recognized. When transported to antebellum Maryland, however, they must pretend Kevin owns Dana to avoid dangerous questions. This pretense reveals uncomfortable truths about power dynamics that persist even in their modern relationship. Kevin initially struggles to fully comprehend Dana's vulnerability in the past. When she expresses fear about being caught teaching slaves to read, he dismisses her concerns. "You're not in any danger. You're white." Dana must remind him, "I'm Black, and I'm probably in more danger than you are." This exchange highlights how differently they experience the same historical moment based on their racial identities. When Kevin is accidentally stranded in the past for 5 years while Dana returns to 1976, their relationship faces its greatest test. Upon reunion, Kevin has difficulty readjusting to modern life. He smashes an electric pencil sharpener in frustration, finds their home unreal, and admits that returning to the plantation felt disturbingly like coming home. These reactions suggest how deeply immersion in another time can change a person's perspective and values. What sustains their relationship through these extraordinary circumstances is mutual respect and commitment to equality. Unlike Rufus, who can only conceive of relationships based on ownership and control, Kevin and Dana struggle toward genuine partnership. When Dana tells Kevin she needs him, she clarifies, "Not to take care of me, to let me take care of myself and to stand with me when I need you." This vision of marriage as mutual support rather than possession offers a counterpoint to the distorted relationships slavery created. Yet the novel doesn't present their marriage as perfect or immune to the historical forces around them. Both must confront uncomfortable truths about themselves: Dana's capacity to adapt to oppression, Kevin's unexamined privilege. Their relationship survives not because they're exceptional people, but because they commit to facing these truths together, suggesting that honest reckoning with history strengthens rather than threatens genuine connection. Kindred explores the complex strategies people develop to survive oppression, challenging simplistic notions of resistance and complicity. Through Dana's experiences, Butler shows how survival often requires painful compromises that blur moral boundaries. Dana initially judges the enslaved people around her for not being more rebellious. She's disappointed when Nigel doesn't immediately embrace her offer to teach him to read, and she silently criticizes Sarah for seeming too accepting of her position. Yet as Dana herself experiences the brutal consequences of resistance, being whipped until she swings by her wrists, half crazy with pain, she develops greater empathy for the difficult choices others make to survive. The novel presents various survival strategies through different characters. Luke counsels outward compliance while maintaining inner resistance. You gotta say yes to the white folks and smile. Sarah channels her rage into small acts of autonomy within her limited sphere of influence. Alice alternates between defiance and strategic submission. Each approach carries costs and benefits, with no perfect solution possible within such an inherently violent system. Dana's own survival strategy involves using her knowledge and skills to make herself valuable. She becomes Rufus's letter writer, Margaret's companion, and eventually the plantation's informal doctor. This approach protects her from the worst physical abuses, but creates moral complications. By making herself useful to the Waylands, she becomes complicit in maintaining their power. When she helps Rufus recover from illness, knowing he will go on to rape Alice, is she preserving her ancestor or enabling an abuser? Butler refuses easy judgments about these compromises. When Dana confesses to Carrie that she feels like a traitor for continuing to help Rufus, Carrie forcefully indicates that without Rufus, all the slaves would be sold and families separated. This moment illustrates the impossible choices slavery forced upon people. Sometimes, cooperation with oppressors was the only way to protect loved ones from worse fates. The novel ultimately suggests that survival itself is a form of resistance in a system designed to destroy Black lives and families. As Dana reflects after witnessing Alice's suicide, she had done the safe thing, had accepted a life of slavery because she was afraid. Yet this safe choice ultimately proves unbearable when Rufus sells their children. Alice's death becomes both surrender and final defiance, the one choice Rufus cannot control. Throughout Kindred, Butler systematically dismantles various illusions of freedom, revealing how power operates in both obvious and subtle ways. Dana's initial confidence in her modern independence is gradually eroded as she recognizes the constraints that shape her choices even in 1976. On the plantation, freedom exists on a spectrum rather than as an absolute. Legally free Black people, like Alice's mother, live in precarious positions, subject to capture and enslavement on flimsy pretexts. Enslaved people with specialized skills, like Sarah, enjoy marginally better treatment, but remain fundamentally unfree. Even Rufus, who wields tremendous power over others, is constrained by his father's authority and social expectations about race and class. Butler shows how control operates through both physical violence and psychological manipulation. Tom Whalen prefers calculated violence, whipping just enough to maintain control without permanently damaging valuable property. Rufus develops more sophisticated methods, threatening to harm others rather than directly punishing those who defy him. When Dana refuses his sexual advances, he threatens to beat Alice instead, knowing Dana's compassion makes her vulnerable to this indirect coercion. Resistance takes many forms in this environment. Some are dramatic, escape attempts, physical confrontation, but most are subtle daily acts of maintaining dignity and humanity. When Dana teaches enslaved children to read despite prohibitions, when Alice refuses to smile at Rufus despite his demands, when Sarah preserves family stories despite separation, these are all forms of resistance against a system designed to erase personhood. The novel also explores how freedom can be compromised through complicity. Dana initially believes her modern perspective immunizes her against becoming part of the system. yet she gradually finds herself adapting to plantation life. After being beaten for attempting escape, she admits, "I was beginning to feel like a coward because I was beginning to accept." This recognition that survival sometimes requires painful compromises complicates simplistic narratives about resistance and collaboration. Perhaps most disturbing is how quickly people normalize oppression. Dana observes this in herself. "I was getting so used to being submissive that it was getting to be more than a physical thing with me." This psychological adaptation represents slavery's deepest violation, the way it could make people complicit in their own dehumanization by gradually shifting their sense of what was normal or possible. Kindred begins and ends with physical wounds that refuse to heal cleanly. In the prologue, Dana has lost her arm. In the epilogue, she and Kevin travel to Maryland seeking answers about what happened after her final departure from the past. These unresolved elements reflect Butler's central message: the trauma of slavery cannot be neatly contained in history books or museum exhibits. It lives on in bodies, relationships, and social structures. The novel's circular structure, beginning with Dana in the hospital after losing her arm, then moving through her experiences to explain how she arrived at that point, mirrors the way trauma disrupts linear time. For Dana, the past isn't safely distant, but erupts unexpectedly into her present. This temporal disruption reflects the experience of historical trauma across generations, how events from centuries ago continue to shape contemporary realities. Dana and Kevin's journey to Maryland in the epilogue represents an attempt to integrate their extraordinary experiences into a coherent narrative. They search archives for evidence of what happened after Dana's departure, discovering that Rufus officially died in a house fire, likely set by Nigel to cover Dana's actions. They find records of some slaves being sold, but no mention of others, including Hagar. This incomplete information mirrors the fragmentary nature of historical records about enslaved people, whose lives were often documented only through property transactions. The novel ends without neat resolution. Dana and Kevin will never know exactly what happened to many of the people they met. Dana's physical scars, her missing arm, the marks from whippings, remain as tangible evidence of experiences that seem increasingly dreamlike. Kevin observes that they needed this journey to find some kind of evidence that the things we had seen and done were real. This search for confirmation reflects the broader challenge of acknowledging historical trauma that seems too terrible to be real. Butler suggests that reconciliation with this history requires accepting its unresolved nature. The wound of slavery cannot be fully healed because its legacy continues in ongoing systems of racial inequality. As Dana tells Kevin when he asks whether she's adjusted to being home, "I don't know, not yet anyway." This tentative response acknowledges that integration of traumatic experience is a process rather than an event, both for individuals and for societies grappling with historical injustice. Despite its unflinching portrayal of slavery's brutality, Kindred ultimately affirms the enduring power of human connection. Throughout her ordeals, Dana is sustained by relationships with Kevin, with Alice, with the community of enslaved people who help her survive, and with Rufus himself, despite his cruelty. The novel's title emphasizes kinship in its multiple forms. There's biological kinship, Dana's connection to Alice and Hagar that draws her across time. There's chosen kinship, Dana and Kevin's marriage, which survives extraordinary strain. And there's the kinship of shared experience, the bonds Dana forms with Sarah, Carrie, and Nigel through their common struggle. These connections aren't idealized. They're complex, sometimes painful, often ambivalent. Alice alternately embraces Dana as a sister and rejects her as a white nigger complicit with Rufus. Dana feels responsibility toward Rufus, even as she recognizes his growing monstrosity. The enslaved community accepts Dana's help, but remains suspicious of her privileged position. Yet, despite these complications, human connection remains essential to survival. The novel suggests that family, both biological and chosen, provides crucial continuity across historical ruptures. Dana's concern for her ancestral line drives her actions throughout the story. When Hagar is finally born, Dana feels elated because the child would be safe and so would I. This moment affirms that despite slavery's attempt to destroy Black family bonds by treating people as property, these connections endured. Community knowledge also proves crucial to survival. Dana initially believes her modern education gives her advantages, but she quickly learns to value the practical wisdom of those who have navigated plantation life their entire lives. Sarah teaches her which wild plants are edible, Carrie shows her how to avoid Margaret Whalen's wrath, Nigel explains the unwritten rules that govern interactions between enslaved people and whites. This shared knowledge represents another form of kinship, the transmission of survival strategies across generations. In the end, Kindred suggests that confronting historical trauma requires both individual courage and collective support. Dana survives not just through her own resilience, but through connections to others across time and space. This message extends beyond the novel to readers, inviting us to recognize our own kinship with both victims and perpetrators of historical injustice, and our responsibility to face this legacy honestly together.